that he had already made his decision and he was happy with it, which is what the uncle said. And the uncle, who claims to be a lifelong Ohio State fan, and if you, with fans like this, who needs enemies, let's get it. Hey, it's Chuck. We are not bemoaning the noon kickoff. We are now owning it. It's a badge of honor. We're the lunatic fringe that defines our coach's legacy when it comes to this game. They don't get to define that outside the family. Dude, we're cut from a different cloth for Ohioans. He's got it all, man. He's even got the jaw. You know the jaw? You see that jaw and you're just like, yeah, man, that's a dude. Do I want Michigan to beat Oklahoma? No way in hell. I don't know what world I'm living in. This is insane to me. And if you saw my outburst, I apologize. It's showtime now. And welcome to Juck on Bucks. Appreciate you so much for joining me. Now, the other day we went over the offensive class grades, and we did that obviously ahead of time. As we know, we're not even fully officially out of the summer recruits because we're still waiting on the David Gabriel George decision on July 22nd. Today, we were going to do the defense, and we're still waiting on the July 18th decision from Carlos May. But we were going to do it anyway, unless something a little more pressing popped up. And it did. It sure did. And it's about David Gabriel George, as longtime ESPN journalist, now On Three journalist, as they go about acquiring talent from all over the place by putting big checks out in front of them and bringing them over to the On Three operation. They got Chris Lowe. And Chris Lowe did a big cover piece on David Gabriel George. And in this piece, he talked to coaches, he talked to scouts, talked to family, talked to the uncle some more. We got some more quotes from the uncle. But most importantly, he talked to David. And that is different because we are not used to hearing from David. David doesn't speak great English. David's very shy, which is why the uncle, Jean Aguinor, has been doing all of the talking for camp David Gabriel George from the beginning here. And the uncle does have some more to say, but man, Chris Lowe went deep on this thing and he was so enamored with David Gabriel George that after the interview, he tweeted a cover from Sports Illustrated from 1982 that featured Herschel Walker and then a picture of DGG next to him and said, I don't know if he's going to be as good as Herschel Walker, but in 40 years of covering the sport, I've never seen a running back this age who looks like him. Interesting stuff there. I think everybody understands that David Gabriel George is a special talent. If he's a Herschel Walker level talent in the college level, that would be absolutely worth all the kerfuffle that we've been witnessing throughout this summer, really, about this guy. Lowe talks a lot about David Gabriel George's family. We won't get into a ton about them here because I think most of the regulars here know about the story here with mom and dad coming from Haiti to Canada. They don't speak English. David himself is a natural French speaker who knows some English, but isn't super fluent in it. And David just turned 17. He's an absolute freak show at 5'11", 220 pounds with a 600 pound squat, a 400 pound bench and a 4.36 40. His roommate at the Baylor school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that Ohio State has offered, Jordan Darren Geely. He is a guy that whether or not Ohio State gets David Gabriel George or not, I want him on the Ohio State roster. He's a defensive back with some really freaky measurables and testing numbers, a little bit raw, but he's aggressive. And when you got an 11-foot broad jump, a 39-inch vert and ridiculously long arms at that position, I'm good. So definitely I would like him on the team. But those two are roommates. They both have known each other since they were 5 years old. And Lowe even talked to him a bit about David Gabriel George and about how, he would like to come to Ohio State, but they're not a package deal. And they need to do what's best for both of their dreams. But rather than talk recruiting, they would rather sit in their dorm room in Chattanooga at the Baylor school and watch Japanese anime cartoons, because that's what you do at the Baylor school. You train. You go back to your room and you watch Japanese cartoons. What you don't do is create any loyalty at all to the state of Tennessee just because that boarding school happens to be within those imaginary boundaries. It's just a plopped in school in the middle of that state or wherever Chattanooga is, and it has no relation to the state of Tennessee. And what I mean is David Gabriel George is not an in-state Tennessee recruitment. I mean, technically, he is, residing in that state. But it is not like this is a kid who grew up in Nashville playing football, like our kid, what's his name? The one that just signed, Jared Curtis with Vanderbilt. Totally different ball game here. Chris Lowe does drop the bombshell that the Baylor school costs $80,000 a year. And I don't know if many people knew this, but Peyton Manning's son going to be the eventual quarterback there. I think he's in eighth grade at the Baylor school, which that's going to be pretty interesting as we got another Manning, only this one, Peyton's son. So that'll be really cool. We also get to the uncle's comments that he made with Steve Wiltfong last week in the article that absolutely blew up. And I was doing a show when that article was circulating. I got done with my show and then I read the article and had to come add a little bit onto the end of that. But a lot of this article was also just about reinforcing Ohio State's decision to go all in, and the reason that they've been treating him so very different than most recruits. We haven't seen them treat a recruit like this since Jeremiah, and they kind of think he's the Jeremiah of running backs. We see that from their actions. A college head coach told Lowe in the article, he's the best I've ever seen at the running back position at that age. Now he's got to go prove it against college players, a lot of them as big and as fast as him. But I've never seen anyone going into his senior year of high school who looks more equipped than he does to be a dominant runner the day he steps onto campus. Now, his high school coach, been involved in football forever, and he said from the moment he saw the film that Uncle Jean Agnor sent him of David when he was in ninth grade, he said, I watched three clips and stopped it right there. I was like, okay, I've seen enough. I haven't seen anything like it before, and I hadn't seen anything like it since. And that's how easy it is to spot just how special this kid is. But he also, Chris Lowe, talked to Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp, now Texas's defensive coordinator. We'll see him soon down in Austin. But Muschamp would come up when he was scouting to the Baylor school, and he was still working for Georgia. And last August, Will Muschamp was out there with the head coach videoing David. And he sent the video to Kirby Smart and he said, hey, I want you to know this kid could play for you right now. And then he looked at me and he said he would start at Georgia today. That's what the head coach said. So obviously the high praise isn't just coming from Ohio State. It's all over the place. Everybody understands this kid is ridiculous. And the most amazing part is he's not the number one back in the class. That's Kamon Spell, who is going to Georgia out of McKeesport, Pennsylvania. Kamon Spell is awesome. I don't think he's David Gabriel George's level, but when we talk about money, it's quite a bit different. As Kamon Spell, the number one running back in the class, is on a deal for roughly $800,000 to Georgia. David Gabriel George's deal will be decidedly more than that. One thing David doesn't do much is tweet, and Chris Lowe hits on that, but he said that he made an exception last week after the Rivals story was published. So the Rivals story with Uncle Jean was published, Uncle Jean and Steve Wiltfong, and all of a sudden everybody's hitting up David. And then David comes out and tweets that he didn't say anything. Now, Mom runs his Twitter account. He doesn't do it, but he felt the need to do it then because he obviously didn't like the dialogue that was going on from his uncle's comments. And he also didn't like that his uncle said that he had already made his decision and he was happy with it, which is what the uncle said. And the uncle, who claims to be a lifelong Ohio State fan, and if you with fans like this, who needs enemies, his mindset, essentially his uncle's mindset in choosing these schools is, why go to Ohio State and be a big fish in a big pond when you can go to Tennessee and be a big fish in a small pond? I mean, that's kind of what you can boil it down to. And I don't think that anybody's really curious about Jean Agnor's mindset as to what David should do, whether he should go to Ohio State or Tennessee. They're curious as to what David is thinking. And when Jean Agnor said all that stuff to Steve Wiltfong, it came across as though these are David's thoughts that I'm relaying. That's how it came across. It did not come across as though these are my thoughts and what I would think if I was in David's shoes. And it was natural to assume that he was talking for David because he's been the one talking for David from the very beginning of David's recruitment. Again, because David's shy, doesn't speak English great, he's been leading the way. So That is kind of what came out of the article. Now, David, in this article with Chris Lowe, wanted to clarify the uncle's comments. And he basically said, my uncle called me and he told me that basically he was just having a conversation and he didn't mean to make it sound like he liked one school over the other. And, you know, that can happen, I suppose. The uncle's just in a conversation and he's wrapping it up. And somehow when it all gets written out, maybe Steve Wiltfong's not putting in the whole context or everything that they talked about. And it just reads like Tennessee looks like the obvious pick here. That can be a miscommunication. That can be something that happens. The issue that I have here is reading all this story. The uncle said that his mind was made up. He's made his decision that he was happy with it. That's not a mix-up. That's either the truth or it's a lie. But David says, no, my mind's not made up. And that's where this thing kind of unravels for me. So David says, when that came in, when he tweeted that, he said it was just crazy. People were getting a hold of him off the hook and coaches barnstorming him, asking if he had shut his recruitment down, if he had made his decision, if he knew for sure where he was going to go, because that's what the uncle said. And all of it, when you look at it together, I don't think David has made his mind up yet. I really don't. I think that David is still very much deciding on where he's going to go. And the way he says it in here, it sounds like he's a guy that's still struggling, really likes both places and isn't quite sure yet, but he's obviously got his make his mind up here soon. He said about his decision, it's complicated. You know, it's hard. You feel this way, like, you know, and then it's sort of 50-50. People will say the 22nd of July is pretty far off, but honestly, for me, it's pretty close. I think it's pretty close too. He says, then I will call my mom and dad, and they're like, we love both. It's your decision. And I'm like, oh God, I need something because I'm going to be playing there for the next 3 years and living there. So you just want to make sure that you get it right. The really nice part for me is my family hasn't pushed me one way or the other. That's what David says. So all they tell me is to play football, train, work out, and everything will take care of itself. That's why you surround yourself with great people, so you don't do anything stupid. I'll find the time to sit down with my family, talk about everything again, and then we're going to decide what we're going to do. We have talked, yes, but I want to be able to tell them I really want to go there. I know it got crazy after my uncle had the conversation with the rival story, but it's still going to be my decision. I just got to say, man, if I am the uncle here and Chris Lowe asked me to be part of this story after the circus that got caused from the uncle's first comments, I'm probably going to sit this one out. But the uncle continues, our focus for this kid, this Canadian kid, is to reach his goal of playing in the NFL. That's his goal. And that's why we are here. This is why we are helping him in everything that comes along with the journey. And we're happy for him. Now, it's the uncle's wife who is the one negotiating the money. She is the one who is talking to Tennessee, talking to Ohio State. As David says, I don't talk money. My auntie is the one talking the business. I really didn't even want to know what they were offering during the visits. It wasn't until after, now that I was getting that at the end. Essentially, he went into the visits, didn't want to know the money, wanted to go and experience the schools without that in his mind, which I think is an excellent decision on his part. I mean, talking about him as a prospect, not just on the field, but off the field, but just the maturity is insane. That's exactly what you would want to do if you were making a decision like this in his shoes as a guy who knew, I'm going to make money. I'm going to make a lot of money in my football career. How do I make this decision best and keep the blinders on to any of the outside noise and just decide, who do I like more? Where do I feel better? Don't tell me the money. I'm going to go in blind on the money. We'll talk about it after. So a really mature kid, man. The guy's got it all. He really does. I hate that some of the other stuff ends up fogging the opinion of the kid for some fans, right? When you start talking about the figures and you start talking about the family, and maybe some people will perceive this as a seedy situation by the uncle's comments last week and the fact that the aunt is controlling the money or the negotiation. But at the same time, if I had someone in my family who was a lawyer who had the ability, and she is, to sit down and negotiate these contracts, give me my Uncle Ray or my Aunt Peggy doing that over anybody else. Like, that's what I'd prefer too, wouldn't you? So I don't think there's anything nefarious about that one bit. But that figure, man, when that money comes up, people get to thinking, you know, screw these people, screw that kid, screw Tennessee. And it just kind of, it kind of skews the view of what we're actually talking about. And that is a great kid and an unbelievable football prospect. But anyway, for Ohio State, they committed themselves a long time ago to winning this recruitment. I believe that by their actions, they believe David Gabriel George is a guy who is a Jeremiah level prospect at running back. And I believe that means they think he can take a national championship contending team and make it that this much better that you need to be to win a national championship, which is exactly what Jeremiah did his freshman year. But the numbers being tossed around don't line up in Ohio State's favor right now. In this very article, Chris Lowe says the Tennessee offer is roughly $2 million a year for 3 years. Then he says the Ohio State offer is over $1 million per year on a multi-year deal. Now, totally separate conversation, but Bo Jackson, who rushed for 1,000 yards as a freshman last year, was a top 10 back coming out, made $150,000 last year. That's the difference we're talking about. What percentage better is David Gabriel George than Bo Jackson? Not much, man, but it's those last 7-8% difference that are all the difference, right? That's what makes the truly special so special. It's just that last little nugget. And David's got it, that's for sure. But we're talking about a serious difference in money from a guy like Bo last year to a guy like DGG. Now, Tennessee, some people will look at that figure offering him $2 million a year for 3 years and say they are absolutely out to lunch to offer a running back that. Ohio State might be out to lunch offering him over $1 million. A lot of people would say that. But when we talk about $1 million, and are we talking about $1 million, right? He's just saying up to, you know, over $1 million. Are we talking about 1.5 or are we talking about $1 million flat? Because if the Tennessee deal is twice as much, I don't see any way this happens. If it's $1.5 million and it's really over the course of 3 years, Tennessee $6 million, Ohio State $4.5 million. Well, now we're a little more palatable, right? Now that's something you could potentially handle. The Adidas deal factors in to the total figure of the Tennessee deal, that $2 million figure. The way Adidas structured the deal with Tennessee and Penn State as well is they give Tennessee and Penn State a pie. In this pie, they can divvy it up between 40 students. Doesn't even need to be an athlete. 40 students at Tennessee or Penn State. Now, they can give David Gabriel George 7/8 of that pie, but it's one set number. That's what the pie is worth, and they can divvy it up in Adidas deals. And they actually do sign Adidas deals, but it's a subcontracted deal. It's not like Jeremiah Smith's solo deal with Adidas. That's a different ballgame. It's also not like the deals that a couple of Ohio State incoming freshmen have in Jameer Brown and David Jacobs. They both have Adidas deals. Those are very different, much smaller Adidas deals. Adidas is in the market in a lot of different ways. And the way that it's at Tennessee, this is essentially a subcontracted deal. Now, as for Ohio State supposedly reaching out to Nike to see if they would do something for David Gabriel George, which was said as kind of an off-the-cuff remark by a podcaster, an Ohio State reporter, but there were no details provided of any kind. I haven't seen it anywhere. Some people kind of took that and it ran all over the internet over the weekend. I don't know specifically what he meant because he didn't give any details. It could mean one of many things. Is Ohio State trying to restructure their deal with Nike that goes through 2033 to get on their Blue Ribbon plan? The Blue Ribbon plan Nike rolled out last year, which includes something similar to what Adidas is doing. They rolled it out with LSU. But it's a lot less advantageous for NIL than the Adidas plan is. Essentially, what they get to do is they get to sign 10 players a Nike deal at LSU. They split it up among sports, and it turned out to two football players got a Nike deal. Now, those deals themselves, I think, are pretty solid deals, but there's just not that many of them. So you can pick a couple of players. Obviously, the schools aren't going to load it all up in football, and that's just, you know, you're going to want to spread it around because it's just, it's an athletic department thing, right? You're not going to hog them all for football, or it's just going to cause issues with everybody. So are they trying to get the blue ribbon deal? Is that what he was discussing? I don't know. I don't know if that's what he meant, or I don't know if he was just essentially saying they asked Nike to do him a solid and sign David Gabriel George to a deal. That seems like that would be pretty weird and not work at all. And clearly it hasn't worked. I just don't know exactly what the details on that are. But again, it was an off the cuff remark that has been just kind of the talk of the weekend on the internet, and did not gave Tennessee fans some real ammo at the desperation of Ohio State, which kind of sucked. But the issue here for Ohio State, they don't seem to be anywhere near the nugget here. If Tennessee's offering two and Ohio State's offering over one, I don't know what that means, but I assume if it was closer to 1.5, it would be worded like that. I think when Ohio State got into this, they said, we're going to be all in. And at the time, they were looking at what the market was and projecting it forward a little higher and saying, we'll do that. And like I said, if Kamon Spell, the number one running back, is going for 800 grand, and Ohio State was expecting that to be kind of the number, similar to Savion Hyder last year, and saying, okay, we need to go even more than that. Will we do it? Yes, we will. Well, that's where they're at. What they probably didn't expect was another program to come in and say, nah, double. Now, is that ignorant? I don't know. I don't know, man. This day and age, I would always expect that going into recruitment for a guy like David Gabriel George, that there's going to be some bozo who's going to do absolutely whatever it takes. And I wouldn't get myself in the situation so deep unless I was also that bozo. But is it really a bozo mentality? And how big is that number actually? Now, if we're looking at Jeremiah, his freshman year was, you know, it was over $1 million. So, and they'd also included benefits, by the way, Tennessee style benefits. It was over $1 million. And with those benefits included, it was definitely closer to the 1.5, or between 1.5 and 2, might have even been more. But what I know of it, there were certainly some benefits in there involved. That was years ago. We've seen the NIL market like basically double, probably 2.5 times what it was since Jeremiah was coming in as a freshman. So if David Gabriel George, if they think he's that level of prospect, and it's not even more than double what Jeremiah got a couple years ago, then how big is it? I don't know. It's not as big compared to this market as Jeremiah's was. So that's where we're at. As I'm rambling on here, and I usually do once I get started talking about a recruitment like this, the bottom line here is David Gabriel George has not made his decision yet. I believe that. The money sounds like it is bigger favoring Tennessee than the gap is bigger than I thought it was, based on how this reads, though we don't know for sure, because, you know, over $1 million could mean a lot of different things. But I feel like if it was more, it would be worded differently. And obviously, we'll never know for sure because these aren't public figures. But how much can I honestly be irritated if Ohio State doesn't land him when Tennessee is going to go this high? I'm not going to be honest, David Gabriel George to me is a all upside play, and I want all that upside. But there's not, like, if you don't get him, all of a sudden you have a big hole in your team. And currently the roster, to me, one of the best in college football. I would love David Gabriel George. But if he chooses to go to Tennessee and make more money and be a big fish in a smaller pond, that's what he chooses. I think Ohio State anteing up over $1 million for a running back it's kind of all they can do. Now, the bigger issue for me, if Ohio State does lose this recruitment, would be the fact that, and again, now I don't know how much we can believe from the uncle, but the fact that he was talking about the relationship, basically that Tennessee won the relationship battle. Because here's the thing with Ohio State. That's how they've won so many battles. And that's why that was so surprising. They've won so many battles being the lower bidder, but being number one, Ohio State having more to offer, and number two, winning the relationship battle. And if they lost it on that, that would be a sting. That would be a real sting, particularly the part where he says, and again, this is the Uncle John Aguinor, so I'll take it with a grain of salt if you want to, but he said that Josh Heupel was involved from the very beginning with David and the family, and Ryan Day, not until like Ohio State's official visit, did they really get a good feel for Ryan Day, which surprises me. I would have thought Ryan Day, knowing how important this was and how much importance, and they had the whole staff go down there to David's high school. Like, if it's of that importance to you, as good as Ryan Day is, and he is good when he gets involved, when he runs point, wouldn't you want to take that on yourself? Of course he would. And it just makes no sense to me. That to me will be the biggest question of all this. Should Tennessee win this battle? Again, I have really no thoughts other than this is a coin flip decision, because I could sit here and psych myself out and say this money makes me feel like it's going to be all Tennessee. But I also feel like David is a very unique kid. I feel like he's a unique kid. Now, it seems like he values these two programs the same. And you could say if he really does, then wouldn't you just let the money be the deciding factor? I would. I don't know, though. Does he really feel that these two programs are the same, or does he feel like they're the same because Tennessee, I might not like it as much, but I get more money. Ohio State, I like better, but I don't get as much money. Or am I just being totally arrogant by thinking, of course, he likes Ohio State better because I like Ohio State better? That could be too. I don't know. Anyway, let's all remember to please subscribe to the show if you have not already. If you're a new Juck guy, welcome aboard. Please hit that subscribe button. Just makes it easier for you to find the show. Helps us on this end out tremendously as we make the push to 75,000 subscribers before season's end. You can also get your own Neyland North Massacre shirt, the first playoff game in the history of Ohio Stadium. Easily one of the most satisfying games of my lifetime at the Shoe. That's available in the Juck Eye shop in the description of this video, because no matter where David Gabriel George ends up, making fun of Tennessee and its fans will never not be fun. Let's talk a little bit about quarterback and the time frame here from a couple of potential Buckeyes here, Buckeye targets. We still don't know what Ohio State's going to be doing here at quarterback in 2027 as we wait for Brady Edmonds' decision. That will likely be this week or early next week. If Brady ends up choosing UCLA, what does Ohio State do in the class of 2027? As we think, looking here, we thought that this was an on year at quarterback, meaning Luke Fahey was a three-star, nice-looking quarterback, playmaker, not likely to ever be the Ohio State starting quarterback, kind of the down year where you don't invest a lot of money, and then you go hard in 2027. Let's say you don't get Brady. Are you still going hard to go and try to flip a top-tier quarterback when you already failed at trying to do that in the spring? Or do you just settle for another developmental guy and take two of those types of guys in a row? That doesn't sound great, but the quarterbacks that Ohio State has good relationships with now in the class of 2028, you certainly don't want to have that be the off year, because you've got an in with a couple of the top five quarterbacks already. And one of them has announced you as their top, you know, your top three on their board already. So for that reason, I do think what we see if Brady Edmonds does not choose Ohio State is that the Buckeyes will bring in another three-star type of guy in the class of 2027. Then 2028 is the year that they go absolutely hard for the top of the board. And a couple of these guys, top of the board guys, have talked here recently about their time frame. Now, Lucas Prock is a guy who I really liked. He was at camp. He is Rivals' number five quarterback in the country, out of the Hun School in New Jersey. That is the Luke Wafel School. They wear Ohio State uniforms at the Hun School, rip off Buckeye uniforms. And Lucas Prock threw for 4,300 yards and 41 touchdowns last year as a sophomore. He's a certified dude. About 6'2", 200 pounds, quick release, pretty good athlete. Had the quarterback aura as we watched him at camp, which I loved. And his top three is Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Indiana. So he clearly wants to be in this region of the country. And talking about his timeline, he said, because we're looking, the top six, out of the top six quarterbacks, three of them have committed here, two of them very recently. So it looks like, okay, are the dominoes about to start falling and we're going to see this class fill up, this quarterback class? And Lucas said, I think everyone in the class is like, all right, we might have to start moving things along because spots are slowly being taken and that's only going to increase. And he's right when you're looking at situations like that. All right, he's got Ohio State, Indiana, Notre Dame. He wanted to take his time. He wanted to wait and go play his junior year and then make his decision, or at least halfway through his junior year. But you run the risk of losing your spot at these places. He says, in a perfect world, I would want to wait until after my junior year to get a better grip on where I'm at. Of course, that's what Ohio State would want. Ohio State would prefer that from all these guys if they would just slow down the process, at least to let the Buckeyes watch the first three games of their junior years. The early commitment from Brady Edmonds really probably only reinforces this for Ohio State, as Brady committed right after his sophomore year had ended. A lot can change on both ends in that much time, and it certainly did in Brady's situation. Obviously it did, because we're sitting here looking at Brady as a coin flip when Brady was the leader of this class for a year and a half. Now, unlike Lucas Prock, who says he's probably going to end up making a decision here relatively quickly if these dominoes keep falling, Ohio State's likely top target, number one overall quarterback, Christopher Vargas, is dead set on taking his time. You can do that when you're the number one guy. Vargas, 6'4", 180, out of Massachusetts, the top quarterback in the country in the 24/7 composite. His father, Wasker, was talking to Brian Doan at 247 and said, Chris is nowhere close to deciding. He plays baseball, and because of that reason, over the summertime, he couldn't make any visits. Well, he was able to make one visit. He made sure to make one. That was to Columbus. And the Buckeyes in very good shape with Chris Vargas right now. That's great. But Chris wants to take his time. Chris wants to go visit all over the country and take in the game day atmosphere. What happens if Lucas Prock or some of the other targets who are also really good quarterbacks want to commit to Ohio State before Vargas is done on his world tour and he wants to be one of the last guys to sign? What do you do in that position? I mean, it's not a new conundrum, but coming off of the Brady situation, it's almost like, man, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You take it too early and you risk things changing like Brady. You wait too long going for a guy like Vargas and he doesn't choose you, and now all the other guys are gone. And then you go try to flip them like Ohio State did in the spring and you get no motion. So what do they do? I think there's a clear answer here to me. The clear answer here to me is when we are talking about quarterback coming out of high school, because the transfer portal is such a robust market at quarterback, meaning if there are 15 programs that need a starting quarterback, it's almost like the agents make sure there are 17 available for them to choose. And you can get yourself a veteran good quarterback or a veteran really good quarterback almost at any point, any year you want to. So with that said, all I really care about out of the quarterback position at Ohio State when they are bringing them in out of high school is to go for the absolute best. Maybe you don't have the money this year. That's fine. Bring in a Luke Fahey. But when you're deciding between, you know, decisions like this, go after the absolute best of the best, because they're the only ones that I ever want to see Ohio State take that first year where they're the Julian year last year. Right? A great young quarterback prospect learning how to be a quarterback. Because those years, as we've seen the national championship for the first 2 years of the big playoff. All four quarterbacks in those national championship games, veteran transfers. The Julian Sain type, the guy who is an excellent prospect in his first year starting, isn't quite ready to win a playoff like that. And you can just see the difference in a guy even like Carson Beck to Julian Sain. Carson Beck, not a Julian Sain caliber quarterback. Carson Beck looked cold as ice against the Buckeyes. So if you're going to eat one of those years, one of those learning years with a guy like that, he better be top tier. So for me, it's always, I'm waiting on the Vargas style prospect, going all in on the Vargas style prospect, even though in this particular case, I really like Lucas Brock. But that's my opinion on that. Anyway, that'll do it for today. One more guys, before we go. This is a tweet that I made in August. It's something I've talked about quite a bit, or in June. Something I've talked about quite a bit. This is one of the best official visit pictures that I've ever seen. That is Cowboy Smith and Cowboy Jr., Wyatt Smith, Buckeyes commit. And I said that this Dovey picture of Cowboy and Cowboy Jr. is the best since the one that James Laurinaitis took with TJ Alford and Riley Pettijohn. At the end of that tweet, I closed it with Wyatt Smith is going to end up a five-star. And I have said that repeatedly. Now, Rivals has just redone their rankings. Wyatt Smith is now up to the number 51 player in the country in the Rivals rankings. Now, just less than 20 spots out of five-star range. Mark my words, the Buckeyes end this class with 3 5-star edges. Wyatt will be a five-star. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Anyway, good news on that. Congrats to our guy. And I will talk to you guys soon. Jungle Bucks out.